Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, May 21st, 2020. We will begin today's reading with the article on the front page headlined, Outdoor Dining Return Expected by Next Week. Updated next phase includes rec sites, parks, gyms, salons. By Ben Orner. Springfield. As the entire state remains on pace to enter the next phase of reopening in just 9 days, Governor J.B. Pritzker announced a major addition to the allowed activities under the phase, outdoor dining at restaurants. Pritzker on Wednesday said restaurants will be able to open outdoor seating to customers when the business's region moves into phase three of the Restore Illinois reopening plan, which all four regions are on pace to do on May 29th. With the right restrictions, tables 6 feet apart and away from the sidewalks, masks, and distancing measures for staff and other precautions, the experts believe that these services can open at a risk comparable to other outdoor activities, Pritzker said during his daily COVID-19 briefing in his office at the Capitol, the first time he's held a briefing in Springfield since March 16th. Pritzker said no specific restaurant or legal action forced the addition of outdoor seating to the Phase 3 plan. Instead, he said that he has been continuously listening to health experts and industry leaders. Sam Toya, president of the Illinois Restaurant Association, said at Wednesday's briefing that outdoor seating will not be a solution for every restaurant, but it will be a benefit to many at a time when every dollar counts. Toya said that more than half of Illinois restaurants have closed during the stay-at-home order, plummeting sales by 70% to 80% and putting 321,000 employees out of work. He called Pritzker's announcement a step in the right direction that gives restaurants a chance to get creative. Let's close down streets. Let's expand sidewalk cafes. Let's use parking lots and public ways, he said. Let's show the world how innovative Illinois can be. Pritzker encouraged local governments to be open-minded to restaurants' ideas. I want to encourage municipalities and mayors who are interested in helping restaurants expand outdoor seating options to do whatever is in their power and best fits their communities to help these restaurants, Pritzker said. The Illinois Department of Public Health will issue specific guidance in the coming days. Restaurants are not slated to open to indoor dining until Phase 4. The governor said that speeding up reopening has been made possible by Illinoisans continuing to obey social restrictions under the stay-at-home order. We've come too far and we've made so much progress because we've kept social distance, worn face coverings in public, washed our hands frequently, and taken care of our most vulnerable to the best of our ability, he said. We must persevere. All state parks will reopen on May 29th under Phase 3, Pritzker announced Wednesday. Phase 3 will also include the reopening of indoor and outdoor tennis facilities with IDPH safety precautions and capacity limits. Golf courses will allow 4 people per tee time, and golf carts will be permitted with either 1 person or 1 immediate household per cart. Boating and camping of up to 10 people will also be permitted. Pritzker said the state will provide guidance in the coming days on how other outdoor recreation businesses, like driving ranges, shooting ranges, and paintball courses, can operate in Phase 3. Gyms, barbershops, nail salons, and other personal care services will also be allowed to begin reopening. The governor noted that local governments are allowed to establish stricter guidelines than those imposed by the state. A handful of municipalities have also tried to reopen early despite the governor threatening to withhold their pass-through funding from the federal government. IDPH Director Dr. Ngozi Ezike announced during Wednesday's briefing that the state is seeing a decrease in COVID-19 hospitalizations. In Illinois, 3,914 people are hospitalized with the virus, which is the lowest since IDPH began publishing that data daily on April 12th, and the first time it has been below 4,000. There were 1,005 patients in intensive care, and 554 of those patients were on ventilators as of midnight Tuesday, which is also the lowest since April 12th. IDPH reported 2,388 new cases of COVID-19 on Wednesday, pushing the state's total above 100,000. The department also reported 147 new deaths, pushing that total to more than 4,500. On a day that saw more than 21,000 tests in the past 24 hours, Pritzker noted Wednesday that the state is also seeing progress with its positive case rate. The governor said Illinois' seven-day average is just higher than one positive case per 10 tests. Illinois has tested more than 642,000 people, which is about 1 in 20 Illinoisans. We are by no means out of the woods. The virus is still causing sickness and taking lives. But directionally, things are getting better, Pritzker said. The next story is entitled, McLean County Adds 5 Cases. Numbers also up in Livingston, LaSalle, Ford, Champaign counties. By Paul Sweech. Bloomington. 5 more McLean County residents have tested positive for COVID-19 as the numbers of people with the novel coronavirus also rose in Livingston, Ford, LaSalle, and Champaign counties. But the numbers of those recovered rose as well. McLean County Health Department announced Wednesday that 5 additional people had confirmed COVID cases, bringing to 194 the number of people from McLean County who have tested positive for the virus since March 19th. Of the 194, 111 have recovered, 67 are at home in isolation, 10 are hospitalized, and 6 have died, the health department said. No new deaths were announced Wednesday in McLean County. The health department previously said that 3 of the 6 deaths were associated with Bloomington Rehabilitation and Health Center, 1925 South Main Street, Bloomington. Dion McNeil, the county communications specialist, said Wednesday that none of the 5 new cases announced Wednesday were related to Bloomington Rehabilitation and Health Center. No additional information was released about the 5 people. The increase by 5 cases follows a recent surge in people who have tested positive for the virus, with 25 new cases on Friday, 9 on Sunday, and 17 on Monday. Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight last week identified an outbreak at Bloomington Rehab, which shared responsibility for the recent surge in cases. Meanwhile, Livingston County Health Department announced that county's 29th positive COVID case, a man in his 70s who was hospitalized. One person died previously. Ford County Public Health Department said that county had its 19th confirmed COVID case, a man in his 40s who is in isolation. Ford has had 1 COVID fatality. The number of confirmed COVID cases in LaSalle County increased by 5 to 130. 8 people have died there. Numbers in Champaign County increased by 37 to 472 people. 7 people have died in Champaign. COVID-19 drive-through testing continues 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily through Friday at the McLean County Fairgrounds, 1106 Interstate Drive, Bloomington. Illinois Department of Public Health, IDPH, told the Pantograph on Wednesday that 232 people underwent testing on Tuesday, bringing to 6,234 the number of people who have been tested since that site opened March 28th. Statewide, IDPH said Wednesday that 2,388 more people had tested positive for COVID, bringing the statewide total to 100,418 people since the coronavirus hit earlier this year. 147 additional deaths, most in the Chicago area, were announced by IDPH on Wednesday. IDPH announced the death of a Woodford County woman in her 90s, but that fatality was reported by the Pantograph Tuesday. The next story is entitled, Criminal Penalties Dropped. Pritzker set to seek civil sanctions for closure violations, by Peter Hancock. Springfield. The Illinois Department of Public Health announced Wednesday that it plans to withdraw a controversial emergency rule that would have allowed for criminal charges against businesses that open in violation of Governor J.B. Pritzker's stay-at-home order. Instead, Pritzker announced Wednesday that he will pursue legislation while the General Assembly meets in special session this week. He said that bill will call for civil penalties for violations rather than criminal sanctions. IDPH filed the emergency rule on Friday, May 15th, after a number of restaurants and other businesses around Illinois announced they would no longer comply with the mandatory closure during the COVID-19 pandemic. The rule codified that violations of Pritzker's stay-at-home order could be enforceable under a law known as the Department of Public Health Act, which makes it a Class A misdemeanor to violate one of the agency's orders. That sparked immediate controversy, especially among Republican lawmakers, who accused Pritzker of criminalizing business owners. Pritzker argued that it was a softer measure than other enforcement mechanisms the agency can use, such as issuing a closure order or revoking a business license, and he likened it to a traffic citation, even though Class A misdemeanors are criminal offenses that can be punishable by up to 364 days in jail. IDPH announced its intent to withdraw the rule during a meeting of the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules, or JCAR, a legislative body that has oversight of state agency rulemaking. That meeting had been scheduled for 10:30 a.m., but it started 3 hours late as Democratic members of the panel reportedly met in private to discuss the rule. Republican Representative Keith Wheeler of Oswego, a co-chair of the committee, had announced Monday that he intended to call for a vote on the IDPH rule. The 12-member JCAR is evenly divided between Republicans and Democrats and between House and Senate members, but it would have taken a two-thirds majority, or 8 votes, to block the rule. After the meeting finally began around 1:30 p.m., Senator Bill Cunningham, a Chicago Democrat, directed a single question to IDPH officials. It is my understanding that the recently filed emergency rule from the department is going to be repealed. Can you confirm that for me? He asked. Yes, that is the case, said IDPH Deputy Chief of Staff Joanne Olson. After the meeting, which lasted less than 15 minutes, Republican Representative Tom Demmer of Dixon said lawmakers had been hearing significant opposition to the order from the public. The next article is entitled, College May Add Diversity Officer, by Lenore Sabota. Normal. A Heartland Community College task force has recommended creation of an executive-level chief diversity officer and a diversity and inclusion advisory board. Board Chair Greg Chadwick said he liked the idea of a chief diversity officer who had a direct line to the president. "We have an all-white executive team, an all-white board of trustees," he said. "We need to demonstrate that our commitment to this is real." The Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Task Force was created about a year ago by President Keith Cornell to advance a culture of diversity, equity, and inclusion, foster a welcoming, affirming, and equitable environment, and enhance student success. Terrence Bond, Associate Dean of Students, presented the task force report at Tuesday night's Board of Trustees meeting. The college had a minority student population of 30% in fiscal year 2019, but the faculty staff is 92% white, with no Hispanic administrators and no full-time black faculty, according to the task force report. Since the report was completed, the college has hired another black faculty member and an Asian American faculty member, said Rick Pierce, provost and vice president for academic affairs. Bond noted that there needs to be a focus on retention as well as recruitment to address the lack of diversity. The report also noted a gap in completion rates between black students and the student body overall. Chadwick said diversity is important because students want to be able to identify with a faculty member. More details on how the group's recommendations will be implemented will be presented at the board's June 16th meeting. The next story is entitled, GOP Seeks Reopening Plan Vote, by Jerry Nowicki. Springfield. House Republicans are calling for, but not expecting, a vote to be taken on Governor J.B. Pritzker's reopening plan this week while lawmakers are in Springfield for an abbreviated legislative session. Before the legislative session began Wednesday for the first time since March, four downstate members of the House GOP caucus hosted a video news conference arguing for more input from the General Assembly, a co-equal branch of state government, to executive authority. They also argued for a more regionalized approach. "We are simply not facing the same challenges in most communities today as they are in Chicago, and yet decisions about reopening our businesses and communities are being made by the same single source, Governor Pritzker," Representative Dan Brady, Republican of Bloomington, said. "The governor needs to begin allowing for local input today by agreeing to let members of the General Assembly weigh in on behalf of our communities and make needed changes to his reopening plan." The news conference concluded shortly before an estimated 150 Reopen Illinois protesters gathered outside of the Bank of Springfield Convention Center, where House lawmakers would take part in the legislative session. Pritzker's Restore Illinois plan divides the state into four broad regions and considers health care and disease spread metrics when deciding whether each of the regions will be allowed to move into one of the next of five reopening phases. The whole state is in the second phase of reopening until at least May 29th, when all are on pace to progress per the plan. The current flattening phase allows residents to visit golf courses and state parks, retail shops to deliver orders placed remotely, and medical centers to allow elective surgeries to resume. The next phase, called recovery, would allow offices, salons, barber shops, and manufacturers to reopen with some capacity restrictions. Basically, any store that wasn't already opened as an essential business can choose to open their doors to in-person shopping with Illinois Department of Public Health safety precautions and capacity limits in place, Pritzker said of the next phase at his Wednesday briefing. Bars and restaurants, however, would not be allowed to reopen for inside dining, even with capacity restrictions, until Phase 4 in the indefinite future. But Pritzker announced Wednesday that those facilities would be allowed to open for outdoor dining under the next phase, provided they follow social distancing guidelines. He said his office, in the coming days, will offer guidance as to how other outdoor recreation activities can reopen safely. While Pritzker has long touted that his is a data-driven approach recommended by doctors and epidemiologists, Representative Ryan Spain, Republican of Peoria, said in the video conference that other localized plans rely on experts as well and should be given a fair hearing. The next bit of state news is entitled, Circuit Courts Okayed to Plan Reopenings, by Rebecca Ansel. Springfield. Illinois' 24 chief judges can decide when to reopen courthouses across the state to in-person proceedings, the state Supreme Court ordered Wednesday. Each circuit is encouraged to continue holding remote hearings as frequently as possible, an extension of the highest court's previous guidance. But beginning June 1st and in consultation with local health departments, courthouses may hold jury trials, lawsuit arguments, and other actions in a courtroom. The Supreme Court's plan is independent of Governor J.B. Pritzker's regional Restore Illinois plan and gives reopening authority to the head of Illinois' 24 judicial circuits. Schedules in each district should be flexible according to the order and guidance from chief justices because local conditions may change. The court realizes that the health crisis is not over, but we must advance justice in a safe and organized manner, Chief Justice Ann Burke said in a statement. Restrictions implemented to combat the COVID-19 pandemic and significant levels of backlog cases present an obstacle for most courts for the foreseeable future, the Supreme Court wrote in its guidance. In a news release, the Supreme Court said, each jurisdiction is uniquely positioned to address those changes and other obstacles created by COVID-19. For many judicial jurisdictions, that reopening process will be slow, and many courthouses will immediately face challenges. During the pandemic, the judicial branch of government has used technology not usually embraced by the courts. Whatever the new normal brings, a silver lining for the judicial branch is the culture shift in the effective use of video conference technology and remote work capacity, the justices wrote in the guidance. They suggest considering having judges and attorneys exchange sensitive documents through encrypted email, allowing electronic signatures on paperwork, and ruling on certain matters without holding oral arguments. Strategies for in-person proceedings should be made in consultation with local health departments, according to the guidance. Officials may recommend foot traffic patterns to ensure social distancing, place tape on floors to indicate safe distances for court visitors to stand, and evaluate where court personnel should be positioned. Judges should also limit how many people are in buildings at once. The Supreme Court advised hand sanitizing stations and plexiglass germ shields be in place throughout courthouses and that there be more frequent cleanings. Justices also ordered face coverings be mandatory and entry refused to those who refuse to wear one. Here's a story headlined, U.S. Farmers Leaning More Heavily on Government Loan Programs, by Roxana Hegeman, Associated Press. Belle Plaine, Kansas. Although the U.S. Department of Agriculture said it has not seen a significant change in loan delinquency rates because of the coronavirus pandemic, it expects an impact if the economic fallout continues. Farm foreclosures have not increased, and the department has taken a number of measures to forestall them, including more flexibility for borrowers to extend repayments for annual operating loans. The department said in an email that it also temporarily suspended loan accelerations and non-judicial foreclosures, as well as stopped referring new foreclosures to the Justice Department. U.S. attorneys' offices will determine whether to stop foreclosures and evictions on delinquent accounts they were already handling. Nathan Kaufman, Vice President and Omaha Branch Executive of the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City, said he does not expect COVID-19 to have an immediate impact on farm loans, in part because of the timing of the pandemic. It really started to intensify toward the later part of March, but that is a time of year when a lot of the major planting decisions and financing decisions had already happened. So a lot of things had already been set in motion prior to the crisis, Kaufman said, adding that if the crisis continues for a few more months, borrowers are going to start thinking about those things again. A state-by-state breakdown for the last 2 years of delinquent direct and government-backed loans that the Associated Press obtained through an open records request from the USDA's Farm Service Agency offers a glimpse into financial difficulties faced by producers that varies widely by geography and industry. Most vulnerable are beginning farmers and smaller agricultural operations that typically get their financing through the agency's direct loan program. Those are typically the riskiest borrowers who cannot get financing elsewhere. The agency directly lent those farmers more than $12.7 trillion and more than $639.4 million of that amount was delinquent as of April 30th. That represents an increase of $1.26 billion in direct loans under that program and a jump of more than $8 million in delinquencies compared with the same data a year ago. Nationwide, 18.76% of government direct loans were delinquent. It's just a precarious time for the producers, said Alan Featherstone, an agribusiness professor at Kansas State University. Overall, you would like to see the total volume going down, but we are adding volume that is ultimately backed by the federal government. Delinquency rates topped 30% for direct government farm loans issued in several states, including Florida, New York, North Carolina, Rhode Island, and Texas. 13 other states have farm delinquency rates exceeding 20%. Hurricane-battered Puerto Rico was an outlier with a farm loan delinquency rate of more than 67%. Just six states, Kansas, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, and Hawaii, had direct farm loan delinquency rates in the single digits at the end of April. A separate program in which the federal government guarantees that farmers will make payments on the loans they borrow from banks and other commercial lenders also was more heavily used. The government backed $16.58 billion of those loans, and $270.65 million of it was delinquent on April 30th. That is a delinquency rate of 3.23%. States heavily dependent on the troubled dairy industry, such as Maryland, Michigan, New Mexico, and Wisconsin, all saw delinquencies rise on government-guaranteed loans, Featherstone noted. The U.S. Department of Agriculture said it will begin accepting applications May 26th under the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, which will provide up to $16 billion in direct payments to farmers and ranchers impacted by the coronavirus pandemic. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for May 21st. Please stay tuned.